Chapter 9. Although LP hadn't been lavishly blessed with musical talent, it wasn't for lack of trying or even working on unique ways to make it in the industry. LP's history with music was marked by at least two notable efforts worth mentioning before he attempted DJing in the UK in the early 1990s. In the 1980s, he and a couple of friends made noise that they called music and joked about calling themselves the Fugglies. The name stuck, and they actually released a couple of EPs named after the string of Star Wars movies that they loved and saw many times. It was kind of like Mad Libs meets Star Wars. The first EP, The New Fugglies, was pressed in 1985, when LP was 16. It was a complete gag. They modeled a couple of the songs after some of John Williams' musical moments, but the lack of proper recording gear, they recorded on a boombox cassette recorder, and complete lack of talent meant that it would be long forgotten by 1985. They also rushed through The Fugglies Strike Back and The Return of the Fugglies, each worse than the previous one, but that didn't stop them from drinking too many beers and smoking a lot of weed and having a shit ton of fun along the way. Shortly after university, LP ran into a few friends who had also just graduated from various programs, and they joked about releasing a new array of Fugglies EPs, again named after the newly released Star Wars movies. They laughed at the titles they came up with, The Phantom Fugglies, The Attack of the Fugglies, and Revenge of the Fugglies, and laughed even harder about how these EPs might actually be better than the new movies. LP's second attempt at breaking into the music industry came in the late 1990s. Napster was hot. iTunes was just getting started. He decided he too would take a serious dive into the world of music downloads, peer-to-peer, file sharing, and hosting. P2P sharing was born out of music fans' frustration and annoyance with having to constantly rotate and turn over their collections to new media formats. Once the reasonably portable and shareable MP3 file format came out, though, Pandora's box was open. That is, until the label slammed it shut again with threats of jail sentences and criminal records. His effort was called Barcord.com, a play on the words bar, where a guitarist uses a single finger to act as a capo up the neck of the guitar, and chord, a term musicians know of as a combination of notes played at the same time. The vision was to be a meeting place for fans, musicians, and venues. Musicians would upload their songs, much like how Spotify works today, and their audience could download tunes and pay a small fee in the process, legitimizing file distribution, paying the artists at least 50% of what was earned. As an added bonus, Barcord.com would give music acts access to local bars and other venues, which would subsequently tap the followers for tickets and merch. Of course, since it was his idea, it was genius, but trying to get musicians to dislocate themselves from the major label record contract mindset was nearly impossible. He had a modest amount of success with the site. There were several thousand small bands and solo artists that signed up and created their own pages, but consumers weren't interested in paying a reasonable price for downloads. Micropayments didn't exist either, making it a huge uphill push against people who didn't want to think about how they got their music. They wanted it to be mainstream, but the legal threats sparked too many questions about LP's business model. His recent return to college created some anxiety for him, but he kept telling himself, even though he wasn't much of a baseball fan, that even Babe Ruth had struck out 2/3 of the time. This would be his third at bat, and he was hoping to at least get on base. The recording class was his favorite, but there were several other streams that were equally exciting. For the first time in his life, he was doing a deep dive into music theory, finally understanding the nuances of different keys, scales, and harmonies. Music history, for fuck's sakes. There were days in class when he felt like music history. Most of his classmates were far too young to know what synthesizers were or to understand some of the recording techniques that the professor brought up, but that didn't deter him from trying to act like a mentor on occasion. He would never be much of a live performer. He had stage anxiety that would cripple his voice and make his hands shake, generating the worst kinds of vibratos and tremolos. Also, Being in bars or other public places that served alcohol didn't help his state of mind as an alcoholic. It had taken him a long time to come to terms with alcohol, and now it was something he tried to block out of his life in any possible way. So, instead of putting himself in positions where he knew he'd sweat profusely and forget the lyrics to whatever he was singing, he stuck to the studio and writing. These were his happy places, and the school worked with him to accommodate his traits.